We'll open the House Committee on Environment and Water. It is Tuesday, May 26th, and this is our second to last meeting at which we can do work. We are considering the possibility of taking advantage of the first week in June for interim, beginning of interim work, but you'll see notice on that if and when we get it arranged. I'm going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 942A. And Mr. Kaiser, and anyone you want to bring up with you or by yourself, either way, to help kick this off.
Chair Cannon and members of the committee, thank you for giving us an opportunity to speak to Senate Bill 942. My name is Teddy Kaiser. I am on staff with Senator Joanne Burgers. She had hoped to speak today, but unfortunately a conflict came up at the last minute, so I'll be speaking on her behalf. This Oregon Climate Corps bill sets up a program modeled after the Master Gardener and Master Recycler programs have been very successful, and it's a climate master program that educates people on issues such as consumption and waste, home energy use. It's proven to be very successful. People have taken this program, have reduced their energy use by 20%. We're going to be doing it through the Extension Service, which has several advantages in that they have offices in all 36 counties, so it allows us to roll out statewide. Also, they have master programs themselves, so they understand the curriculum and development. So it's a partnership between University of Oregon and Oregon State. University of Oregon will be working on curriculum development. Oregon State Extension Service will be using their offices to roll out statewide. It's not an unfunded mandate. It will only come as there are funds available. And to that point, there are -3 amendments that you should have with you. They address two issues. One, to make it very clear that this takes no general funds. It's only as there are grants and donations available. And the other was an issue that came up with IBEW and the Home Builders Association, that they were worried that this was going to train people to be competitors with their clients. And so we just changed the word from work to be educated to show this is an education program. It's not a work training program. And so they are now fine with the bill. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Let's hear from the other witnesses and then take questions. Go ahead.
Representative Cannon and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Mazey. I live at 534 Sunnyside Drive in Eugene, and I work for the University of Oregon Climate Leadership Initiative, and I developed and managed the Climate Master programs that would be authorized by this bill. And I'm here today to tell you a little bit more about the programs and to apprise you of the benefits of the Oregon Climate Corps Act. Oregon communities are desperately in need of actionable education that supports businesses, individuals, and youth in reducing their energy and resource consumption. We hear this all the time from communities that we work with. And education like this and support would put Oregon communities in the forefront of an emerging carbon-constrained economy. So this suite of programs, as I mentioned, supports households and individuals, businesses, and youth. And the household program is a 30-hour training, and participants pay in part for this training with 30 hours of volunteer education and outreach. So they learn strategies for reducing their energy use at home, their transportation, changing their transportation patterns voluntarily to reduce costs and energy use. There's also a focus on consumption and even diet. And we found that participants in this program reduced their home energy use by 12% to 14% in 1 year. They cut their greenhouse gas emissions by 2 tons per person, which is 10% of the national average, and even more of the Oregon average. And they did that through purchasing less disposable goods, changing their waste patterns, changing, moving towards more alternative transportation, and cutting their home energy use. So it's been very effective in supporting behavior change and using existing technology. The business program is based on a similar premise. Businesses take about a 30-hour training. It lasts 9 months for businesses. They get a lot of support. And they pay also in part with some external outreach to others in their supply chain and in their sector. But they also are asked to do some implementation of the lessons that they're learning in their own workplace. And as such, businesses have been making changes to reduce their energy and resource use. The youth curriculum is now under development and will be out in schools and we hope 4-H groups in the fall. The benefits of this act and the program are, as I mentioned, home energy savings of 12% to 14% in just 1 year. The emissions reductions, which also helps those communities that now have climate action plans in place or are developing those. A lot of the changes, most of the changes individuals are making and many that businesses are making are also saving them money. Participants in the household class went so far as to say this program changed their life. So it's another nice side benefit. These programs connect businesses and individuals with existing, often underutilized programs like traffic calming programs, commuter solutions down in Lane County, or the energy management programs at utilities or the Energy Trust, recycling and reuse programs offered by government or nonprofits. The program brings together OSU and U of O in a partnership and is very attractive to OSU's urban constituency and is growing that. And finally, as I mentioned, this program puts Oregonians in a position to really take the lead in a new carbon-constrained economy with new thinking to reduce our energy and resource use. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Let's hear from the last panelist.
Chair Cannon, I'm Lila Hoaglum, the Director of Special Initiatives with Oregon State University Extension Service, and I'm here really to address the part of the bill that calls for the partnership between Oregon State University Extension Service and the University of Oregon Climate Leadership Initiative. I am here to speak in support of Senate Bill 942. What it calls for is a partnership between the two institutions that will, in fact, then help Oregon residents in reducing their energy use, consumption patterns, and greenhouse gases. This program, as was identified earlier, is patterned after the very popular Master Gardener program, which was developed and run by the Extension Service. The U of O Climate Leadership Initiative actually developed the curriculum for this program and tested the curriculum, and then came to OSU Extension as an opportunity to deliver the program. As you know, we have offices in, or as you may know, we have offices in every county in the state, and we have OSU faculty located in those offices. This program would be an added program that would be consistent with the suite of programs that we have to deliver to Oregonians. Extension faculty and through Extension offices deliver research-based educational programs that address issues that are important to local people. And the issues of reducing energy and consumption patterns and that result in reduced greenhouse gases are gas emissions are important to many Oregonians, both for economic recovery purposes and for as well as for environmental purposes. OSU Extension is uniquely qualified and uniquely positioned to deliver this kind of a program because we have significant experience with volunteer-based programs. You may know that Extension has over 20,000 trained volunteers across the state of Oregon. You know them probably as master gardeners, as master woodland managers, as family food educators, as 4-H leaders, as organic gardening volunteers, as wildlife stewards, and so on and so forth. To add this to the portfolio would be, frankly, efficient, effective, and economically sound for the state. Our faculty are well-positioned and well-experienced with leading and managing volunteer-led programs similar to this. So the infrastructure itself, which is already established, would work very well for this kind of a program. We, on average, one Extension faculty member right now leverages the work of about 112 volunteers. So, again, this program fits well with the kinds of programs that we are positioned to develop. The partnerships are also important to Extension. We have a number of partnerships across the state, depending upon the program, depending upon the location of the program. But having both universities, the U of O and OSU, in this particular program, I think provides important checks and balances, balances in research and the information that's out there that's relevant to energy conservation and carbon sequestration, as well as renewable energy technologies. Can also be applied by the common Oregonian, if you will, across the state. Energy conservation and efficiency is important to Oregonians, and because of that, I ask your support of Senate Bill 942 as we work together to discover ways to best fund and implement this program for the people of Oregon. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today, and we are very open to any questions that you or the committee might have.
Thanks for your testimony. I appreciate the collaborative work here on the part of our universities and you, Teddy. It's a great model of a program that works already on the recycling side, this Master Gardeners and Master Recyclers program that I'm very familiar with and very excited about, and have an opportunity to extend it here. So I appreciate the good work that's gone into it so far. Let's see if there are any questions. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, when one of these pieces of legislation passes and we make this kind of suggestion, I'm just wondering what actually happens inside your departments, because it seems to me if something's going to happen because we ask this be done, something else won't happen. So what is it that won't happen as a result of us asking you? Because I don't see any additional funding here. So what are you planning on shoving out the door so this can come in?
Go ahead. Representative Cannon and Representative Bentz, this program actually would not be implemented until we find resources in order to implement it. And so it will need new resources from grants, either public or private funds, fees, and so on, in order to truly implement the program statewide. Without that, it becomes an unfunded mandate, which is basically what you're talking about, which we, if the bill, in fact, were to read as an unfunded mandate, we would be not supportive of the bill.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we had funded it, what would it have taken to do a credible job? Do you have some sort of an estimate of what we're talking about to make this actually work?
Yes, Representative Cannon and Representative Bentz, we have done some calculating in terms of budget numbers, and it obviously depends upon how quickly we want to roll it out and how many counties we want to roll it out in. But it will cost probably about $30,000 per county to implement the program, and in addition, we would need at least a faculty member or a portion of a faculty member at the U of O to continue to develop and maintain and upgrade the curriculum, and a faculty member with OSU Extension to manage the volunteer portion of the program and to make sure our faculty are well trained for it. So in that case, the fiscal demands for the program probably would be somewhere between, again, depending upon the number of counties that we want to implement it in, I would guess somewhere around $800,000 to $1 million on the high side.
Final question. Yep. Assuming that funding was in place, I'm curious about your, I hate to say assumption, but your thoughts on what the rural community would think of this program. Do you think it would be welcome, or would it be something rural folks should be worried about, or have you had any chance to vet it with any of the rural community folks through the Extension offices?
Yes, Representative Cannon and Representative Bentz, we have had an opportunity to vet it through some of our rural offices as well as some of the urban offices. As you might guess, some of the urban offices pick up on it more quickly. However, we have had significant interest among the rural counties as well, in particular related to the youth portion of the program. One county that has expressed a lot of interest in the program is Grant County, and so which is pretty rural county. Although the urban counties clearly have picked up on it more quickly and are more interested in it initially.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Any further questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
There are four other people signed up to testify, and if the four of you could come on up, we may have to add a chair, but we can take you as a single panel, if possible. And is it Mr. Rohde? You're signed up first. Why don't you go ahead?
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is George Rohde. I own two import auto repair businesses, Eugene Auto House and Euro Asian Automotive. I'm proud to say my businesses have received the Emerald Award from the Chamber of Commerce for Environmental Values and the Mayor's Award for Sustainability. Both shops are EGO certified and have roofs covered with solar panels, producing about a third of the electricity we use. Been in business for over 34 years. Average tenure of my 10 employees is over 15 years. Stand on four boards at present, along with being a Rotarian and a SCORE volunteer. I'm here to ask you for your support of Senate Bill 942. And the reason being is I am in a class called Climate Masters in Eugene for the business side, which Senate Bill 942 supports. This class is all about how to save energy, reduce waste, and make better choices affecting my triple net business. Yes, even in these times, my business is doing well. And I would like to answer one of the questions of possibly as a businessman, where the funding is going to come from. The more money I make, the more taxes I pay. So it has helped my bottom line. The information from this class has inspired me to make changes in my lighting, install ductless heat pumps in both my businesses and at home, install motion sensor lighting, reduce my waste to the dump, ask my suppliers to limit the packaging, and I'm constantly checking on reducing my carbon footprint. I'm learning lots of small changes will add up to my bottom line and profitability and add to sustainability of our world. And my final is I ask you to support Senate Bill 942. The more businesses that learn how to save both financially and environmental matters, the better place Oregon will be to live. And I thank you all for your time.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Cannon and the rest of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Bailey Payne. I live in Corvallis, Oregon, and I recently took the Climate Masters at Home class, which is slightly different than the class that he just spoke about. But I just had a wonderful experience with it. It's really made an impact on my family's energy use. We're much more conscientious about our water consumption and transportation, and a number of different areas that the class covers. It was just an excellent course. And I'd like to speak on behalf of this class, not only because of my own experience with it, but also because I feel that it'll be well received throughout the rest of the state. OSU Extension Service, I think, is, as you all know, has a great reputation and really has credibility throughout the state. And I think that that's pretty important given the sensitivity of this topic, and also that they have such a deep network or inroads that they've made with people throughout the state. So I think that they're really a top-notch organization to deliver this programming. In my job as a recycling coordinator for Marion County, I teach a recycling course, Master Recycler course, which is very similar in structure to this course. And I can tell you firsthand from my experience in that role that there's an incredible desire out there Our classes fill up the minute that we announce them, and I understand up in the Portland area they fill up in a matter of minutes. So I think that there's definitely a desire out there. I personally would have taken the class. I would have paid a lot more than the minimum amount that they charge because of the savings in my utility bills that I've seen. And then just finally, I urge you to support this this bill because I think it's a pretty cost-effective, well, very cost-effective in that they're not asking for funding. But I think that given the number of volunteer hours and the dynamic between community building that it provides, I believe that it's a pretty worthwhile endeavor. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your testimony. So you're either Chris Schultz or Kevin Pickett.
Kevin.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Cannon and committee. I'm here to apprise you of the benefits of the Climate Masters at Work class that I'm currently being conducted spring term through the University of Oregon. My name is Kevin Pickett. I'm participating in a 10-week pilot curriculum along with approximately 20 other people representing local businesses, local government offices, and nonprofits. Where do you begin to learn about green? I got on the internet and I did a Google search and I found 49 million hits. It was and is simply overwhelming. A much simpler, productive, and comprehensive, and it turns out quicker way to begin is to enroll in the Climate Masters through the University of Oregon. I enrolled to gain an overview of where renewable, green energy, recycling, transportation, carbon credits, and the like were at this point in time. The materials presented are from people who are working in their particular area of expertise, and I find their presentations to be relevant and real-world in application. The materials are well-presented, well-documented, and after class, emailed to each class participant so that we can use it in our own businesses and pass it on to others as well. Actual websites, calculators, Excel spreadsheets to use in our real-world applications are being disseminated for usage. A common theme from each presenter is to find the easiest way to implement his or her information referenced in Section 2C of SB 942, or where do you find the low-hanging fruit? Without fail, there is always low-hanging fruit or simple, easy ways to implement change that can be followed up on and the benefits harvested for the business, our community, and our environment. A particular note is the information that was presented and referenced in Section 2D of SB 942, projects related to renewable energy technologies. Speakers from business, local government, and the state of Oregon have come in and spent a great deal of time teaching what is happening today in Eugene, Lane County, Oregon, and the state of Oregon. Simplifying the process of how do I do this, where do I start, who do I need to contact, how do I pay for it, and what help is available. As SB 942 instructs the University of Oregon to work with Oregon State Extension Service to implement their Climate Masters program throughout the state of Oregon, it pleases me that they would use an established system already in place with a terrific reputation and recycle current programs to continue and grow this terrific work for the good people and the businesses of the state of Oregon. Thank you for this time and allowing me to testify and ask for your support for Senate Bill 942.
And thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Go ahead.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, I'm Chris Schultz representing the Lane Transit District. LTD's commuter solutions staff works with the program to train attendees about reducing greenhouse gas emissions and congestion, extending the life of our expensive infrastructure, the use of transit and alternative modes of getting to work and other places folks need to go. LTD's found that participants often take these ideas back to their employer or back to their business and enact positive change. It's a good program. We support the bill.
Appreciate it. See if there are any questions. Seeing none, you're excused. Thank you very much. That's everyone we have signed up for the public hearing. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 942A and open a work session on Senate Bill 942A. We have dash three amendments. Are they dash threes?
Yep,
I think so. Dash three amendments. And I would take a motion. Representative Boone.
I move the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 942.
Representative Boone moves the dash a three amendments to Senate Bill 942. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so moved. And I'd take a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 942 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Boone moves Senate Bill 942 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We do have our paperwork in order, and notice of no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement that confirms what we heard from the witnesses, that this would not, that the state would not bear any costs associated with this program. And is there discussion? Representative Benz.
Chair, I'll be voting for this in committee. I may change my vote when it reaches the floor. I do have some concerns. I want to make sure the folks out in my part of the world are happy with this use of the Extension Office. I think it will be a positive thing for our communities, but I want to check.
Thank you. Representative Benz. Any further discussion? I would point out, I mean, just on a personal note, I think there is a lot of value to this program. I think, relatively knowledgeable about some of the low-hanging fruit that I can do, for instance, on my 105-year-old home to make it more energy efficient. Nevertheless, the actual practicalities of doing it, from finding the financing to the contractors, knowing what's a higher priority, you know, insulating my walls or replacing my windows, sealing my ducts. I mean, those questions, I think, are ones that many, many homeowners, even knowledgeable ones, have, and I think this type of program could go a long way in helping answer those questions and move forward both our efforts to address climate change, but also to save money. And I think that's, you know, where a lot of people will come at this, certainly on the energy efficiency side, is, as subject Representative Bailey knows well, a matter of saving dollars, and that's particularly exciting. Any further discussion? Representative Smith.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll be voting yes in committee, but I want to reserve the right to vote yes again on the floor.
So noted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Boone.
Thank you. I would suggest that you find a really good contractor that you can live with for the next couple of years.
Yes. Well taken.
Literally.
Yeah. That might require rearranging my life in a way that would not be acceptable. But Representative Barnhart.
Apropos of that comment, Mr. Chair, when my wife and I moved into our house that we live in now 32 years ago, we hired a contractor to help us make minor repairs and changes to the building, and then later to remodel the kitchen. The last work we had done on the house was done by his son this year. It will continue.
Good for you.
Our house isn't quite as old as yours.
My daughter is 1.5, and I am working to help her use a hammer and getting her ready for years of repairs on this home. Seeing nothing further, Sue, would you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Aye. Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Camp?
Aye. And the motion carries. Senate Bill 942A will go to the floor. And Representative Smith, your name's on the bill. Willing to carry it?
Sure.
Very good. Representative Smith will take this bill to the floor. Close the work session on Senate Bill 942A. And let's move to Senate Bill 38 and open a work session on Senate Bill 38. I saw Andy, yes. We have proposed amendments to this bill. Beth, do you want to remind us and our large viewing audience what the subject of Senate Bill 38 is?
I will try.
Do you want to come up, Andy, or bring anybody, suggest anybody else? Yuri? Go ahead, Beth.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 38A authorizes the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt rules to require registration and reporting by persons who import, sell, or distribute for use in Oregon electricity or fossil fuels.
Mr. Papich.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead and tell us what we need to know about the amendments, which I believe were alluded to in the testimony we have from Andy Ginsberg in our previous hearing. There was some work still that needed to be done, and what do we have before us?
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Yuri Papich. I'm the Air Quality Program Operations Manager at the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm here to urge your support for the -7 amendment. I believe you have three amendments in front of you, the dash 5, dash 6, and dash 7. The dash 7 is the most current amendment, and it includes the language from the dash 5 and the dash 6 all in one. And just to remind you that this bill, the main purpose behind this bill is to fill some gaps in the Environmental Qualities Commission's authority to require reporting on greenhouse gases. It adds in electricity importers and fuel distributors, and it's actually a small number of individuals that we would add that need to report, but it represents a large amount of emissions that are missing in our current authority. So the Dash 7 amendment does two main things. The first thing the Dash 7 amendment does is clarifies what information needs to be reported by electricity importers. And in the Senate, Pacific Power introduced an amendment that would limit what they are required to report. And we supported that amendment in concept, but we had some concerns over the specific language within the amendment. So they agreed that they were going to work with us on the House side on some amended language, and we've been working with them since then to come up with the language that went into the Dash 7 amendment, and that just clarifies again what electricity importers would need to report. And then the other main thing the amendment does is it adds a study to evaluate the need for fee authority for the new reporters. So it doesn't actually add any new fee authority. It just says it directs the department to study the issue of the need for a fee for these new reporters and then to come back to the next legislative session. So
I have a couple of questions. It looks like the Dash 7s would completely replace the bill, although when I compare them side by side, it rewrites most of it. So perhaps you can highlight the specific changes. For instance, the consumer-owned utility section has not changed, if I am comparing them correctly.
Chair Cannon, I think that the reason it shows up as all new text is some has moved around, and it looks like all new text. So I'll have to take a minute here and look at what is new and what's not. I believe there's new language in Section 2 that we are trying to restore back to the old language in Section 2 that was in the original bill or very similar to that original language. So Section 2 changed, and then we added a new subsection 4 under Section 2.
Yeah.
That clarifies what the electricity importers need to report. And then Section 3, at the very end, I believe there's a new Section 3 that talks about the study, and that's new language.
Can you give us a sense of who has seen these amendments and worked with them?
My understanding is that the amendments have been looked at by Pacific Power. Well, let me step back. The language that went to Legislative Council was seen by Pacific Power, I believe Associated Oregon Industries, I believe the Petroleum Association has seen them. I think Andy worked on the fuel on the fee study language, so he would know who else saw it for that part. But the main changes on electricity power importers, Pacific Power worked on it because they were the originators of the amendment in the Senate.
Okay. Any other questions for Yuri while he's up here? We can get him back too. I would certainly be interested in hearing from anyone else who's been involved on this, particularly if you have concerns about the way forward. This was I think it's fair to say this was a consensus bill. There was this outstanding issue of making sure the language worked for Pacific Power, but I think we've just got the amendment this afternoon.
Right. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Chair Cannon, it's our understanding we don't know of any opposition right now to this language,
okay.
The language that went into Ledge Council, so when the amendments just came back.
Okay. If there's anybody else who'd like to testify, you want to make yourself known, folks are maybe just looking at it for the first time this afternoon. All right, given that, it's not our very last opportunity to deal with this bill, and as much as I'd like to clear our docket and move forward, that will not be, I think, wise in this case, nor necessarily in the case of the other bills that are posted for work session today. So I am optimistic that we have something that will enjoy consensus, but we'll need to give folks a chance to actually read it and let you and the committee know if there are things that still need to be worked out. I think we're also missing a fiscal that would apply to these amendments, so we can't actually move this bill onto the floor today quite yet. Anyway, okay. Thanks. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not probably as familiar with this issue as I ought to be, but if it is in fact the case that the information available to the state in this area is incomplete, a requirement that allows us to make it complete would, I think, be very, let me put it a different way, probably essential to our ongoing efforts to move toward a sustainable energy environment and reduce greenhouse gases. And I'm sure hoping that between now and Thursday we can get this bill into the shape it needs to be in if, in fact, those holes exist.
Absolutely, Representative Barnhart. Thank you for the comment. I couldn't agree with you more. I think this bill is very important. It is my intention to move it along. I think my interest today is just in making sure that folks have had a chance to actually look at this language,
yep.
Provide any feedback. We may or may not, make amendments to the amendment to try to improve it. But we will certainly, I certainly intend to move a bill. I think this is among our, the most important business left before this committee. Representative Byrne, Jensen.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on the amendments. I see 2-5. And which amendments are we supposed to read with under a microscope, and which are amendments that are not intended to be added?
Yeah, I think you can explain that. Mr. Pepich.
Yeah, Chair Cannon, Representative Jensen, the -7 amendment is really the one you should focus on reading. It includes the language from the -5 and -6 amendment. I'd focus your attention on that one.
The -7 is going to replace the 5 and 6?
Correct.
And any and all amendments that preceded the 5 and 6?
Yes.
Are something of an exercise in consuming trees rather than information.
My understanding is there's just a couple of words difference between the 2s through 4s and then the 5s through 7. There was a shot at it. Didn't quite work out, so those amendments are not before us. The 5s, 6s, and 7s reflect the better product, and the 7s rolls the 5 and 6 into one.
Thank you,
one.
Mr. Chair. I appreciate the information.
Thanks. With that, I will carry over Senate Bill 38 to Thursday, May 28th. Thank you, Yuri.
Thank you.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 38. Let's hear, actually, Representative Roblin. How quickly do you think we can get him? Pretty quickly. Let's stand at ease for just a moment. Committee, don't go anywhere. We're going to wait on Representative Roblin to talk to us about 391. So committee will stand at ease. It's on the record with Senate Bill 391 and Representative Roblin. Tell us about the work that you did on this bill last week.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin. I'm a state representative from District 9. We had a short one-hour little work group to talk about some amendments that had been drafted and had came up with some other ideas. And at the work group, I couldn't remember all the names of the people, but Beth could probably give you that. But we had both people from Fish and Wildlife and Agriculture, along with state veterinarian, some other people. And then we had some advocates for certain exotic animals, especially small cats and small monkeys, and another person whose name I do not remember who was also an advocate. So we listened to the two sets of amendments we had, plus one, I think it's the dash H that you'll see in your before your committee right now, and I think she's probably here to talk about that one. What we did do is we came up with some amendments, and I believe they are captured in the 11s and the 7s, that we could come to an agreement on as a group, even though I will tell you that at the base of the bill itself, there is not agreement, and I want to be clear about that. The groups that the Humane Society, the veterinarian, and others would say that they agree with the base bill and the amendments, the 7 and 11s. The group that came and represented current breeders and other people, they don't agree with the base, and you'll see that in their 8 amendments that talk about having small cats and small monkeys as still exempt from the exotic bill so that they could continue to have those. So that's where we didn't get to agreement. We did get to agreement, I believe, and they can speak to that, on the 11s and the 7s. So I'll start with the dash 7s, and really basically what that does is it allows the grandfather to really be a grandfather clause that you put in the rest of the bill. It says that if you have if you have a USDA license and you're doing this and then eventually you decide you want to get out of the business and your USDA permit goes away, because of the short turnaround timeline in the bill, there would be no provision for you to get an ODA license and to continue to have the pets that you've been raising to breed and otherwise. This bill says that you have a period of time after your USDA license goes away to get the ODA permit and therefore continue to keep grandfather the animals that you have. You won't be able to buy new ones and to breed, but you can keep the animals that you have. The dash 11s were the little more complex ones. And so what we all agreed to was sanctuaries, wildlife sanctuaries, are not places that should keep exotic animals. What their job is to rehabilitate animals to return to the wild, and therefore having them in here, they don't have any licensure and all that kind of stuff. So saying that they should be able to keep the exotic animals didn't make sense to anybody in our work group. So we took them out of being an exception and said they, like the Humane Societies and others, have a certain period of time if an animal's dropped off, because other people aren't going to realize if they have a crocodile, they know the reserve is down this area, they might drop the crocodile off. And we didn't want them to instantly be breaking the law because they have this animal. So the issue is they would then have a period of time to notify appropriate officials and get the animals to the appropriate place that they need to be taken care of. So that's part of that one. It also allows specifically for service monkeys, if they are trained by this nonprofit organization, and the service monkey, as long as they are permitted by the federal government in their regulations for them to be service animals, then they will continue to be a service animal here. And if you don't put it in, we found out from our Fish and Wildlife, who had looked this up, or Ag, one of the others, I think it was Ag. What we found out is that currently the federal government does allow states to regulate which service animals they would allow. And so if you specifically took monkeys out, the federal government would say, then monkeys can't be in Oregon, even if you have somebody that has one, because they say, just go pick another service animal. And so what this particular bill does is it specifically allows that as long as monkeys can be used as service animals in the United States, then they will be used in Oregon. If the federal government changes their mind and takes it out, they would go away. I think that's pretty much what the amendments do. So if you have any questions, I would be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Representative Roblin, and I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your work on this issue, and in particular the work on this bill last week. I think you have brought us closer to something that we could feel really good about, and you know, has gone some way towards satisfying some of the anxiety that's, or reducing some of the anxiety that's out there, although I know that still exists in some quarters, but I think your work and your presence has been helpful. Glad it was you.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll see where we get.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, I want to say thanks also. For many of the people on this panel, they've played this game more than 4 or 5 months. And for me, there's been an interesting question about when we're here, is it relatively a pro forma exercise where we hear feedback and apply a lever when the right people tell us to? And when there is a chance for the application of judgment from committees to look at bills and say, hey, what if we did this? And the proponents of those bills look at them and try to do that and come up with answers that respond to certain concerns, it is deeply gratifying, and I appreciate it very much. And it frankly is what I think we're supposed to do. I think it's supposed to be our job. And I really appreciate you doing that. And to the folks who think I'm not just saying this to them, but I'm saying this to you about another bill, you might be partly right. but only partly right.
Thank you. Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you. It did occur to me, Mr. Chair, that a background as a high school principal may have been of use in the work on this bill as well. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Representative Boone.
So I just want to get this straight. Roblin, thank you also for your work. So the group agrees on the dash 7s and the dash 11s, but not the dash 8s.
Correct. And the major difference is whether or not small cats of an exotic variety and small monkeys should be exempted or not. In the 8s, they would be exempt from the statute. I can speak to that.
I think you should. Your work on this goes back.
From a personal standpoint, I tried to take that out as I was working on the other things. But.
Yep.
And I won't speak for Representative Boquist, but last year we offered this same, or last session, we offered a very similar bill. And I think this one is better, actually. I think it covers some more issues. But we had long discussions, and I haven't had as many this session with him. But part of the issue has to do with the exotic animal trade is a trade that takes place in a lot of these animals in South America and Central America. And there are real problems with how these animals come into possession and who it is that we are funding when we buy them. And so there are real problems with terrorist groups and other groups in Latin America that aren't necessarily the kind that we're fighting here all the time, but in those local governments they are. But funding comes from exotic animals, exotic plants, feathers, all sorts of different deals become of value. And those values then are transferred, and eventually we don't see the connection to that when they come to America because they've gone through a lot of other handlers until they come to this country and they sit in, you know, quarantines and they do all this kind of stuff and we try to make them healthy. But for me, it's one of the reasons why I get upset with these bills is that they are funding people who are not being helpful in this world right now. The other part that has always been frustrating to me, especially with the small primates, is that And we are very careful in this country, and I think the government does a good job of putting animals in quarantine and doing things. But we are introducing an animal here who has the ability to catch many diseases and transfer them back and forth between people and that animal. That's true of other diseases, but with primates, it happens much more often. And anytime you add those animals into close proximity with human beings, you have the opportunity to transmit and share diseases which can transform themselves in different populations and come out. So it concerns me as a public health issue. And then the last one is that we have crocodiles that get dropped off in Coos Bay all the time. So we seem to find crocodiles, and it makes the front page of the paper, and when we try to figure out what to do with these large animals that were everybody's pet for a while, and they were cute when they were little, but then they got big, nobody wanted to take care of them. So,
they're in Coos Bay.
Yeah, we've had 3 or 4 front page crocodiles.
Just a quick follow-up. We've heard from, and I've heard from some constituents and members of the group that's advocating some of the smaller animals, that they're responsible actions are being kind of mixed in with the irresponsible ones, and that that's not a real fair treatment of it, and that possibly by doing this bill with these amendments that we would then force the people who are irresponsible further underground, or they're not going to stop, you know, breeding and buying these animals. But those who are, you know, I mean, and we all got the pictures of this, that really cute cat with the big ears. And, you know, people have their pets, and it's just kind of, I worry about that part of it. I have a couple of constituents who raise animals, show them, you know, and they don't, I don't think they have crocodiles or big cats, but they do have these little cats and little horses and little donkeys and stuff.
I worry personally a little bit that just like the original house cat that we have came from these bigger cats, and we kind of made decisions about how to do things. Once you start putting limits and you don't send a clear message about, you know, we should take care of animals that are domesticated than ours. We don't need to create these new ones. The problem that comes about, in my opinion, is that, and I talked about this at the work group. So we like Bengal tigers. They're really beautiful. And, you know, my wife's school is the tigers. I mean, that's what they are. So we want little tigers. And now if we set 26 pounds, we'll start figuring out, find the smallest tiger we have and start breeding until we get the smaller tiger, until we get under 34 pounds. So now we got a 34-pound Bengal tiger. We played God, and we made this animal. Many of the animals you see are that way because they're cute. There are very few animals out there that, in their own context, aren't cute. I mean, we do that. But that doesn't mean that we need to try to domesticate them, because we won't. And, you know, I have people who, in Coos County, we have a lot of people that love animals. And they have the bear, you know, that took showers with their owners and all that kind of stuff. And the bear grew up, and he still, it was a pretty good, friendly bear. But eventually that bear is still a wild animal, and you don't take that part out of them, and something bad can happen. And that's true even of these small cats. They are not domesticated cats. When we interbreed them, and there's people who really can't handle them. And I agree with you that there comes a point when they might go underground. Most of the cats that we get dumped off here, I think, probably come from California, where it's illegal, right? So they don't know what to do, so they bring them up to Oregon. That's not the solution. What we're asking and what you're being asked to do today is make a decision about a philosophical belief, what we should do with these kind of animals, and which we want to have them. And I think that there are people who are going to have a hard time with that, and there are some very, very responsible people. Actually, the people that came and represented that group, I think, are very responsible people. They are really good people. They want to do the best thing that they can, and they're asking for a different kind of decision, and you guys get to be the decision makers in that process. But I believe, personally, that the best thing for us is to make a clear mark and then figure it out and try to figure out how we're going to help those people deal with the situation, either get the ODA license they should have if they want to grandfather it in, or not have those animals. That's just me. But I appreciate all the work that the people came there with.
So follow up, yeah. and then Rep. Roblin brought up a point that I'm still not clear on. So with this amendment, not the dash 8, the dash 7, or 11th, I guess it would be, these animal breeders with cats, they could have this cat, and it would be grandfathered in. If that cat dies, they can't buy another one.
If they have a license to be a breeder, they can get another cat.
They can get another cat.
If they, because they're making this other cat that is legal in the state.
Right.
If they get rid of their federal license, they're out, want to get out of the business, and they have these cats, they can, the license is to let them get a ODA license now that allows them to keep those cats until they die. But they would not be able to buy another one after that, as I read the bill.
Thank you. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support this bill today, and I want to thank the representative for the hard work that he's done. And I appreciate the amendments that have been brought forth with it. I am, however, struck with a number of sort of similarities of things in American history. First thing that we've done with the passage of bills like this is we've just simply raised the price.
That's true.
Of those exotic animals coming into the United States. They come in for a fee. Now, you know, well, it's not too great, not too small maybe, but they get in. Passage of a bill like this, if it were to become uniform across the United States, would just raise the price. People want exotic animals. They're probably going to continue to want and have exotic animals. I would give you a number of illustrations if you need it, but you could just take the Prohibition Amendment as one sort of example that seemed to do very little, So, yeah, that's one observation, that I have with it. I also have a little bit of quarrel or concern with the, I don't know whether it's the 11s or 8s or 7s or 16s, but the ones that have the amendment that has to do with the helper animals sort of thing. First off, I have a little disagreement with confining it to the particular animal that I don't have the thing bill in front of me, but this genus now. Monkey. In fact, I'm not sure that a chimpanzee might not be a good monkey. Now, I know that that good monkeys or bad monkeys, not all that different than good people and bad people. They're quite frankly a lot of people in the world that I don't want to be left in the same room with, at least not without my 12 gauge. So I have some concern, with that. Although I realize the current helper monkey is one. I think to one of the people lobbying the bill, I think she's an attractive but relatively small lady, and I thought that, a 225-pound chimp that was trained in martial arts, might be very comforting for her to have as she walked down the streets of some of our cities to provide, a pretty good bodyguard at a reasonable cost. The other part, it goes, with that section. I noted in the language on the bill that it's only nonprofits that may train these animals. Now, quite frankly, Mr. Chair, as a good Republican on this committee, I cannot pass up an opportunity like this but to comment that I really dislike the discrimination against the private enterprise system in this bill. I don't know why training by a for-profit organization. Now, I understand that there's only one organization at the present time that does it, but that doesn't mean that I might not, in my aging years, decide that this would be a great business because I like animals and I go into it on a for-profit basis. Now, you might say that there's a little likelihood of that in light of the fact that I ran for the state legislature, and therefore I'm not terribly interested in things that have to do with profits. Be that as it may, if we had more time, I would like to address those particular that point. We don't have the time in at this time, Mr. Chair. And we probably don't have the time for me to, kind of ramble on about my concerns about this. But I will support this bill today, and I do thank the people for making the amendments. Particularly, I think a very important amendments, but particularly the one for the helper monkey. I think these little guys can be extremely helpful for people who are less fortunate through sometimes no fault of their own than we are. And to deprive them of that help, I would be very reluctant to do, and I appreciate the ADA and those rules, but also appreciate that the ADA says that we could still discriminate against this little guy. So the good work that's been done is genuinely appreciated by me. And even though I'm not inclined to be as afraid of monkeys as I am some other animals, like the Homo sapiens, I will support the bill.
Thank you, Rick.
And an answer to that question.
We may need to stay at the ease on this. Thank you, Representative. Go ahead.
I always appreciate the wisdom that Representative Jensen brings to the topics, both here and in rural. So thank you, Representative Jensen.
I would be happy to let Representative Jensen ramble on any time with continued comments in this vein. Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just need some clarification again on the A7.
Yes.
Now, the idea here is just to allow someone who has the animal to keep the animal legally, not to breed the animal. Is that correct?
Yeah. When they have the USDA permit originally, right now the way the bill is written, if I have an animal, I can go and get my ODA permit, and that stays. We grandfather the ODA permit. If they're going to breed animals, they have a USDA permit. And so they continue to breed now, but the bill has a time certain when you have to get your permit. So let's say they breed for another 10 years. Well, they've already lost their option. So when they stopped being a breeder, they get rid of their USDA license, they can't legally keep the animals that they have. So this continues the grandfather by allowing them to go get an ODA permit and keep their animals until their animals die. So it provides to those people who are breeding them now the same protection that a current owner has to keep the animals that they already have.
Thank you.
Any further questions? We'll let you get back to committee. Thanks very much for your work on this. I really do appreciate it. Representative Gideon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to mercifully give Representative Roblin a chance to get out. But I do want to add, as he's leaving the room, my appreciation. I particularly, as you well know, Mr. Chair, ask you, if we could at least have one work group on this, and we did. So I'm grateful to you, and I'm grateful to him. As he spoke, and as others asked questions, you know, it almost felt like a work session, which we're not in. I want to remind everybody.
We're not.
Are we?
I think so.
But we don't have a motion on.
We don't have a motion.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. That's okay. I'm just a junior chair. The only thing I'm sure of, unfortunately, coming out of that, is that we either need to kill this or we need more time to be in a work group. I know this has been discussed in previous sessions, but make it clear to the panel, this is the only hour that it was spent in work group, and this is a contentious issue, and there are important issues that the representative brought up and that were brought up in the session. They're not resolved. And he may or others may feel that we've moved forward. I don't, and I'm uncomfortable. And I appreciate Representative Jensen's comments, but to me, he was talking me out of the bill. If he's comfortable with it, that's one thing. But I thought he made some very good points that I hope underline the fact this is not resolved. And if you're not interested in withdrawing the bill at this point, either for consideration Thursday or for the interim, and I hope you are, but if you're not, I want to bring forward the eights. But before we do that, I just want to make sure you're clear of my intention. I think we're unresolved. I think it's a thorny issue, and I am afraid, this is my number one fear, that we are hurting innocent folks. We talked about good folks and responsible folks. We can't just pat them on the back and say, you know, we know they had to do this. We're going to put people out of business, and we don't want unintended consequences in a bill that we're trying to do something positive in terms of controlling disease factors and other issues around these animals. So let's not move ahead because we're tired, because we're at the end of the session. Let's make sure we're not hurting somebody, and we either amend this thing or we need more time in an interim to study it further, to have a task force, to have work groups that can really get into this. We uncovered the fact we're unresolved. That's my point. And we ought not to move ahead. Now I'll pause at that point, because I'm sure you're moved by that speech.
Do you want to bring up the dash eight? We can have a discussion in light.
All right.
No, I plan on continuing with this work session and moving forward. So if you have an amendment.
Fair enough. I think that's the wrong angle. But I do believe that we ought not to just disregard the eights. So in a discussion about the eights, I will, if you'll entertain the motion, I'd appreciate it. I'll entertain the dash eight amendments to, I lost my place, Senate Bill 391A. Okay. And it's, I believe it's dash A8.
Representative Gilliam moves the dash A8 amendments to Senate Bill 391. And I believe we do have these in front of us in our packets. And Representative Gilliam, do you want to tell us the thinking behind this amendment?
Well, with your indulgence, I would rather have the author of the A8s, who's in the room, briefly discuss them, if that would be all right with you.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll be at that point then, I think, in interest of fairness, opening it up to others to testify.
I understand
that. As well. Is this the first time that, did we have these amendments when we considered the bill previously?
Yeah.
No. Okay. So, with that in mind, I will limit this to, you know, just a couple of minutes each, because we really do need to move on. We have at least one other bill that I'd like to take up today. I know Representative Bailey has to be on his way in a few minutes, so we will move very quickly to consideration of the dash eights and go ahead and bring up.
I would ask for Molly Schaefer to come forward if you would indulge her testimony.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, I'm Molly Schaefer. I have a USDA licensed facility in Oregon I've had for 20 plus years, and I represent a group of owners throughout the state that I hope are all responsible exotic animal owners. I wasn't prepared to speak today, so I'm sorry if I'm scattered. I was on the committee Friday that worked on the bill, on the amendment, actually, and I guess that's what I'd like to bring up. It was a good experience, and we worked well together on the amendment. I would have felt a whole lot better if we had worked together on the bill, not on the amendment. And I seriously believe that if the same group of people got together to create a bill, that we could come up with a bill that we could come back to you with next session that would have unanimous support from both sides. I feel like we're willing to give on our side. If, you know, we can just get a half an inch on their side, we'd give a foot on our side. And I really feel that if we were given the opportunity to actually create a bill together rather than to work on an amendment, that we could come up with a bill that would be reasonable. The A8 bill, or A8 amendment, basically what it does is it makes the bill a public safety and a health bill, where the animals that are truly dangerous, have a potential to be dangerous in the state, would be banned from ownership from private individuals, but the people that currently keep serval cats, little fennec foxes, those sort of animals, they would be able to continue to keep those animals with a state permit and would be able to replace them. And people who decided that they wanted a little 3-pound fox for a pet would be able to go to the state, meet their requirements, pay for their permit, be inspected, and maintain those animals as pets. And the other comment I just wanted to make, it keeps coming up that all these animals are coming in from the wild, and it creates a market for people in those countries, terrorists and that sort of thing. I think you could probably talk to the state vet, who would probably know also, but the people that currently have permits for exotic animals in Oregon, with the exception of the crocodilia, which are not currently under a permit, those animals are all captive bred and have been for many, many generations. I am a breeder. My breeding stock has been captive for many, many, many years. I do not have any imported stock. I don't know anybody that has imported stock. So when we're talking about animals coming out of the wild, I believe he's actually referring to reptiles and the crocodilia, not the exotic cats, not the exotic primates. Primates have not been imported into this country for the pet trade since the early 1970s. So any primate that a person's bringing into this state has been captive bred in the country for at least 40 years, and the state requires testing for tuberculosis, salmonella, shigella, Arizona, and internal and external parasites before that animal can even come into Oregon. So not to mention the fact that they've been captive bred for generations, the state requires a lot of testing to bring those animals into the state. So we feel that the public safety issue as far as disease is a non-issue. You're not talking about an animal that's come out of the wild or been exposed to any kind of disease, and they're tested right before they're brought into the state besides. And the small cats, again, there's never been a case in this country where a person has been killed or seriously mauled by one of these small cats, and we feel that to ban them across the board really is punishing people that are doing a good job.
Okay. Thank you for your work and your testimony. You are, if I recall correctly from previous testimony, you are a USDA permit holder. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the people who you say that you represent, are they typically also USDA permit holders?
They are actually private owners, USDA license holders. A lot of them just have the ODA permit and they have their animals as pets. Some of them are USDA licensees that are breeders. Some are exhibitors. So it's actually a broad range of people.
Okay. The testimony that I recall from our public hearing, there were opponents to this bill. They were, I think, in every case, USDA permit holders who, under the amendments that we're considering today, I think it was the Dash 11, the grandfather clause, would gain the certainty that we heard they needed with respect to what happens if my permit expires, I don't renew,
yes,
I don't want to turn over my animals. And,
yes,
and so I appreciate your concerns. I also recognize that the folks who I've been hearing from, and I think the committee heard from, have primarily been folks that will be protected, whose livelihoods will be protected under this bill. So I have some, I take some issue with the comments of Representative Gilliam, and am glad to know that under these amendments we at least protect the livelihood. I mean, I think we're talking about your livelihood as a breeder of these animals.
So, address.
Yeah.
Chair Cannon, I appreciate that. I would like to just let you know, this bill is being passed in many states, and so I appreciate the fact that you're protecting my ability to keep my animals once I go out of business. Bills like this passing are guaranteeing, basically, that I go out of business, because if I have no customer, I have no reason to produce a product, which I think is really the true reason behind the bills. But my concern is the people that have owned a serval for the last, I have a lady that has owned ocelots for 35 years now. Should you ban them, I guarantee you that woman, when hers dies, is going to end up with another one, but it will be here illegally. The state won't know where it is. She can't get veterinary care for it. That's my concern, is that it creates a situation where the people become criminals, the animals don't get treated correctly, animal welfare is compromised, and that's my concern.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for bringing this forward. And I'll ask a representative of Humane Society to come up and also talk to us about the Dash 8. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, representatives of the committee. My name is Scott Beckstead. I'm the Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I was a participant in the work group from last week. I think that the main point I want to make here is that everyone involved in this effort has been sensitive to the issue of people who own these animals now. And we have supported every effort to make sure that nobody is dispossessed of an animal, so that you have the amendment whereby someone who holds a USDA permit but who allows that permit to expire can still keep their animals. And even in the original version of the bill, if you had an animal, and even if you had an animal illegally, if you were holding one of these exotic animals without a permit, you had a grace period to go and get a state of Oregon permit. So nobody is being dispossessed, and if you have a USDA permit and you're making money by breeding these animals, then you're not being deprived of your livelihood. The fact is, as Representative Roblin, I think, stated so eloquently, is that this bill expresses the policy intent that there are some species of animals that are suitable to be kept as pets, and there are some species that are not. This bill has been supported by the Oregon Zoo, by the Oregon Animal Control Council, by the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, all of whom see strong public policy reasons for making sure that these animals are not kept as pets by private unlicensed individuals. The fact is that there are many stories. In my area alone down in Douglas County, two attacks by monkeys, one on a newspaper boy, another on a man by a macaque monkey that is a common carrier of a very exotic herpes virus. These are legitimate concerns. And the fact is that I would go back to what Representative Roblin stated. If you feel like it's okay to breed these animals as pets, then that's your position. But this bill states the policy position that we should not be turning or attempting to turn these wild animals into domestic pets, by especially by people who don't have the experience and the wherewithal to manage them. With respect to the small cats, the original version of the bill was written so that people could continue to breed the small wild felines with the domestic felines to create the hybrids. I have one of those hybrids in my own household that we rescued when a woman died, so I understand sort of what the mentality is or what the justification is for that. But to just be able to keep these wild felines, to keep them as pets for their own purposes, again, I think violates some pretty strong public policy mandates that wild animals should be living in the wild, and you pose a threat to public safety when you take an animal that is a wild animal and attempt to bring it into civilization.
Thanks very much. We've had lots of discussion on this issue. We have a motion before us on the dash 8s. Representative Bernhardt.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend the motion by substituting dash 11 for dash 8. And I'd like to speak to it, if I may.
Representative Barnhart moves that we amend the motion by substituting the dash 11 for the dash 8. Representative Barnhart, to your motion.
Thank you. I think to fairly put the issue before the committee, it's important to actually vote on these two together. Passing my motion would substitute it for the dash 8. Defeating my motion would leave the dash 8 on the floor. This, if I recall correctly, this is the amendment that Representative Roblin recommended, acknowledging that there was a difference of opinion in the work group about the viability of the bill at all, as I understood his testimony, and that's the reason for making the motion to amend.
Thank you, Representative Bernhardt. So this motion would substitute the dash 11s for the dash 8s. He actually described two amendments, the dash 7s as well. We can deal with that separately.
Mr. Chair, this one is on point with the dash 8.
Thank you.
That's the reason I made that motion.
Is there further discussion on the motion to substitute the dash 11s? Representative Gilliam.
Just to understand, once we vote on the representative's motion, we're back.
Well, back to your motion.
Yeah.
Right. Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Boone.
I'm confused.
Okay. Tell you, is it possible to suspend the roll call, or?
I don't know the answer to that.
I can repeat the motion, which was to substitute the dash 11s for the dash 8s. So the dash 11s are one of the two amendments that Representative Roblin described to us. This motion would insert them into Representative Gilliam's motion. It would replace the dash 8s that were part of Representative Gilliam's motion with the dash 11s. If this motion is adopted, we will then need to vote on essentially the dash 11s. That will be the motion on the table.
That's the part that, yes, but I thought I heard you say then the dash 8s, we would vote on those too.
If this motion is successful, the dash...
It becomes the dash 11s.
Yes, yeah. The motion becomes the dash 11s.
Nothing 11. Prevents us, if it fails, from voting on 11s? 8s. No, I'm 8, you're... Yeah. It doesn't kill the 11s. It's about replacing the 11s with the 8s.
That is my understanding as well.
So, no.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
No.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. turnout.
Sue?
4-4. The motion fails. We are back on the motion for the original motion, which was the dash eights. So the motion on the table is to move the dash eights into the bill. Discussion. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the representative, I call him the chair of revenue, to my right, and I know what he's trying to do is come up with the best bill on this subject. So I just want to reiterate my view on the eights is that if we're going to go ahead, they represent a very reasonable compromise. And there are still a number of other things in the original bill. We can vote on the other amendments as well. But eight represents a reasonable compromise, in my view, and I hope you'll agree with me, that allows small and safe, not wild and crazy, small and safe animals to continue to be cared for by licensed, inspected folks, folks like you already just heard testify. So I urge us, if we're going to move ahead, let's be fair and include the eights. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The motion is on the dash eights. If this motion fails, we'll be back to neutral. If it succeeds, the eights will be in the bill. I think in either case, there may be additional motions on additional amendments. But the motion is on the dash eights. Is there any further discussion? Sue, please call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye. Oh, no. Sorry.
No.
Representative
Benz?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Smith?
No.
Vice Chair
Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon? No. And the motion fails. No motion has yet been adopted. Representative Bernhardt.
May I try something else?
You may.
I would like to move the A7 amendment.
Representative Bernhardt moves the A7 amendment.
Quickly, this is the amendment that deals with one of the issues that was raised in our public hearing, that so that those with current USDA agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture license would be able to keep their animals under a license from the State Department of Agriculture if they chose to stop doing business and simply keep their animals as pets.
Representative Barnhart moves the dash A11s. Is there any?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, A7s. Is there any further discussion? Representative Boone.
This, but if they can keep their pets or their animals until they die, mm-hmm. And or if they lapse the USDA license, then they can have a time period to go get an ODA license, and they can continue to crossbreed the hybrid cat. Is that right?
That's in the underlying substance of the bill, I believe.
Oh, that's just in the bill. Okay. Yeah. But they cannot breed their specialty cat. Is that right?
It depends on what version of the Section 1 we use. Right now, Section 1 is the one that's printed in the A engrossed version of the bill.
And I'm really confused.
This Representative Barnhart, do you want to take a shot at it?
Well, I would simply say that this amendment isn't related to the question because regardless of whether the A engrossed version of Section 1 is adopted or the Dash 8s or the Dash 11s or some other version of Section 1, Section 1 and maybe 2, This amendment would simply allow, under whatever the other rules are, would simply allow those with a current USDA license to keep their animals if they chose to stop doing business and accept a license from the State Department of Agriculture in order to keep their current animals, whatever they are, as pets. That's it. It doesn't affect the other portions of the bill at all, as far as I can tell.
I believe that's the case. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair,
I want to make sure I'm getting the numbers right. Was it, in the testimony we heard at the beginning proposing the dash A7 and the dash A11s, these are the two consensus amendments. They didn't make it a consensus bill, but the amendments were the consensus amendments. Is that right?
That's right. These are the two amendments that Representative Roblin described, and there is still, of course, underlying disagreement about the fundamentals of the bill, but these two amendments, I think, in the view of everyone who participated in the work group, improved the bill.
Great. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Jensen, are you planning on making it back to your chair, or is there...
I'm planning on, but however, I've been operating with a little disadvantage here since I haven't had all of the amendments, and I've tried to read from one of my colleagues.
Okay, so the motion is on the dash 7 amendments, the amendments that came out of the work group, and seeing no further discussion and seeing at least one committee member who is very anxious to go to a meeting, I will call the roll on the dash 7 amendments. Representative Boone, right. Before I do.
So this bill was one of the two agreement. This does not put anybody out of business.
Oh. Right. That's correct.
It doesn't.
All I can say is what Representative Roven, the way that he reported the work of the work group.
It doesn't apply.
Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Bent?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Excuse.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A11 amendments to Senate Bill 391.
Representative Smith moves the dash A11 amendments to Senate Bill 391. Do you want to say anything to your motion?
These are the other set of consensus amendments. Don't make the consensus bill, but consensus amendments. I think the challenge before was there might have been people who preferred the A8s to the A7s and the A11s, but my impression is that the A11s will be superior to the bill as it stands without the A11s. So I do move the A11s and hope that we get multiple votes in favor.
Thank you. And this includes the exemption for folks with disabilities who possess a service monkey, removes the wildlife sanctuary as one of the exemptions to the bill, allows a humane society or animal shelter to house exotic animals for 30 days or less, allows someone to take in one in an emergency situation for 48 hours, again, a product of the work group last Friday. So the motion is on the dash 11s. Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Bent.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
No.
Chair Cannon.
Aye. Motion carries. The 11s are in. And a motion on the bill? I think, do we have are we set with our paperwork related to the 7s and 11s?
Yeah.
Okay, take a motion, Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 391 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves Senate Bill 391 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We've had quite a bit of discussion on the bill. It's been amended, and if there is nothing further, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Bent.
No.
Representative Boone.
No.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
No.
Chair Cannon.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 391 is to the floor. Representative Roblin has agreed to carry it. Members, I hope to get a little farther in today's agenda. This just adds to our time on Thursday. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 391 and carry over the remaining bills, Senate Bill 76 and Senate Bill 596, to Thursday. in order to close the Committee on Environment and Water. Thank you.